Okay, so we hit 2 Kings 12 this evening. If you've been part of this series, which I haven't, you will know everything and anything that's been going on. But I'm pitching in at chapter 12, right in the middle of it. And here we are here. Now, can we have the first slide? I've only got 2 slides tonight. That's right. Okay. Relief! Relief! There was a new king on the throne. Things would be so different now. Life would be so much better. But hang on. The new king was only 7. How could he make life better? God had been at work just as he had promised. His covenant was still working. He was in control. God was in charge. This 7-year-old lad was a descendant of the great King David. God had promised one of David's descendants would be on that throne. And here he was. Jehosheba, the boy's aunt, had rescued him from the evil butchery of his grandma, Athaliah. She and her husband, Jehoiada, the priest, had taken him into their home for about 6 years. The world then was a dangerous place. The crucible of conflict was boiling. Life was cheap. The great kingdom of David had been divided, and this small remnant, Judah, had almost lost its rightful king. But God was in control. He'd inspired Jehoiada and Jehosheba to risk their lives and save this lad. But it wasn't easy for Jehoiada and his wife. After all, he was around 83 years of age. Can you imagine that? Having a toddler around, I think, would have been quite challenging. But they had a godly influence on this boy. My question is, do you feel old? I'm not going to ask you if you are old. Too old to have a positive influence? Not sure. Not if you are walking God's way. With Jehoiada's godly influence, Joash began to rule. But the influences around him were challenging. There was the temple, the place where God had said he'd meet with his people, decaying badly from neglect. Government support for the temple had long gone. Instead, there were other places to worship. It was much easier to climb a local hill and make a sacrifice there than go away off to Jerusalem to the temple. For most people, that was just too much effort. And besides, the gods of the area, the ones who gave the rain, weren't they? The local gods gave fertility, not a remote god way off in the temple in Jerusalem. He didn't know what the people needed. Local people did. And the priests who served in that temple in Jerusalem were demoralized. Little support from the leadership and little enthusiasm from everyone around. They could only muster half-hearted energy to serve the Lord. Yet, they knew, above everyone, that God had saved their king. He'd kept his promises to the nation. Joash sees a challenge. There was no coherence in the nation, no vision, no focal point, no commitment to God. Renovation of the temple would be a wonderful way to pull people together, to inspire and encourage everyone. So he gives the priests a mission. Get the temple sorted. Get it repaired. Smarten it up. Make it a place people would want to come to see that God is great. It was a long-term goal. But verse 6 says, by the 23rd year of Joash's reign, the priests still had not repaired the temple. So the 30-year-old king calls in his uncle, who was by now even older, 113. Can you imagine it? This 30-year-old calling in this 113-year-old, I don't know whether he had sticks or what, but he came. And all the other priests, and he asked them, what's going on? You know, I commissioned you to get this temple sorted, and it's still a wreck. Why aren't you doing it? It's been ages since you started. What's the problem? Is it money? Don't you have the resources? Isn't it great? Joash, the 30-year-old, keen to get the temple, the place where God met with his people, sorted. What he'd tried before, we've no idea, but I would guess he'd had several conversations with different people through the years. Maybe they promised to finish this and that, but never got around to it. Who knows what was going on? And here's a challenge for us. If we're serving God and making him known, then we need to be seriously committed to ensuring it gets done. Whether we're like one of the priests or in leadership like Jehoiada and Joash, we need to be doing what the Lord lays on our heart to do and what we've committed to do. Well, the strategy meeting leads to some decisive changes. The collection of money had to be clarified. What's to support the priests and what's for the building work? Money for the work would come from the half shekel per head tax on each male. If you want to refer back to that, that's in Exodus 30, 11 to 16. Special gifts made through promises and vows. If you want to find out more about that, that's in Leviticus 27, 1 to 8. And voluntary gifts. People would know that what they gave would be directly for the building fund. Their normal giving for sacrifices would support the priests. So things were clarified. And the priests, no longer would they be near sanders and drills. They weren't going to do the repairs. Specialist builders would be called in to get the work done. The priests would then devote themselves to their day jobs of enabling the people to meet with God. Jehoiada, old as he was, got out his woodworking kit, took a chest, bored a hole in the lid, and placed it beside the altar where the sacrifices were made. Isn't that great? 113-year-old man with his woodwork kit getting it out. Notices were posted, a proclamation was issued about giving, so people knew what was happening and how they were responsible to contribute to the national cause. All the officials and all the people brought their gifts gladly, it says to us. There's another chapter of the Bible that refers to this story, and that's in 2 Chronicles 24. And in verse 11 of that chapter, it says how gladly they brought their gifts. The priests put all the money into the chests, and when it got full, the king's secretary and the high priest counted it, bagged it up, handed it over to the clerk of works. And they, in turn, paid the workers, the carpenters, the builders, the masons, the stone cutters, as well as buying in the materials needed for the work. Verse 15 is great. They didn't require an accounting from those to whom they gave the money to pay the workers, because they acted with complete honesty. Isn't that brilliant? Charity commissioners wouldn't allow us to do that today, but that was what was happening then. Brilliant. Thank you. Next picture. Time for a couch. Feet up time. Success must mean rest. Many years of hard work had been accomplished, and the temple was now completed. There was money to spare, and so articles for the service and for burnt offerings and dishes and other objects of gold and silver were made. Burnt offerings were presented regularly. Everything was back as it should have been. God's king on the throne and the temple, the center of worship again. Definitely couch time. But Jehoiada, this courageous and generous man, died, aged 130. Nothing less than a state funeral was appropriate. He'd been such a hero for the nation. This godly man was buried with the kings in the city of David. You can read about that in 2 Chronicles 24. What would happen now? It was time for contentment. Couch time. Feet up and rest. As a lad, Joash had been miraculously rescued. He'd grown up with godly relatives. He'd led the people well and accomplished a great restoration work on the temple. He was a great king. After all, it says, after God's own heart. Can you sense a however coming? Here we see what really is in Joash's heart. Maybe when you leave to go to uni, or when you start an apprenticeship, or when you go out to work, or move away from home, you suddenly realize you're on your own. While you've been at home with godly parents, while you've been part of the youth group, while you've been getting on well with folk at church, everything's going well. And that was Joash. He did godly things. He repaired the temple. He impressed his godly uncle with his desire to get godly things right for the people. But now, his uncle had died. Maybe you've been helping out with the music. You've been busy with kids' club. You've helped with the youth. You've been sharing time with folks at the feast. But now, maybe your friend, your mentor, has moved away. How is it really for you? How is it really for Joash? There's a gap in the book of Kings which the chronicler fills in 2 Chronicles 24. Now another group of advisors move forward to support Joash. You can't really be serious about all that godly stuff, can you? Times have changed. You need to understand things from the point of view of the people. The officials of Judah came and paid homage to the king, and he listened to them. Flattery, friendship, fun, and they abandoned the temple of the Lord, the God of their fathers, even though he had kept his faithful promises to them. Even though Joash had been saved from a brutal murder and cared for during his childhood by his courageous and generous aunt and uncle. It wasn't simply a matter of ignoring God, oh no. It never is simply a matter of ignoring God. Something else had replaced God. They worshipped at the Asherah poles and the idols, the local gods of fertility and rain. It never is simply a matter of ignoring God. Something or someone always replaces him. Our attention, our desires, our interests always get drawn from God to something else. And it's usually caught up with friendships or a desire to be included. God was angry because of their guilt. But they were his family. He loved them. He was angry, but he desperately wanted to show his love to them. He was angry enough to show his great love by sending them messengers. And these messengers warned the people of God's anger with their sin. They pleaded with the people to come back to God. Would they listen? No. The local deity, the local Asherah pole, much easier. Much better fun. Already God's anger had been shown. An invading army from Aram threatened the country. The leaders went to the temple for help. It looks good. But did they plead to God for his forgiveness? No. Instead, they stripped out the heritage of the nation, silver and gold from the temple and the royal palace that had been valued for years. It was just given away so the enemy would retreat. And in spite of being impoverished, the people still ignored God. Even though several prophets had spoken into the situation, pleading with the leaders and the people to seek God, only a few, if any, took notice. There was, however, one man who would surely be able to speak into the deafness of the people. Courageous, generous, and godly Jehoiada, his uncle, had had a son, Zechariah. Surely they'd listen to him. God's spirit came on him and he spoke up. This is what God says. Why do you disobey the Lord's commands? You will not prosper because you have forsaken the Lord. He has forsaken you. Surely this godly man, the son of such generous and courageous parents, would make an impact. But they plotted against him. Have you heard that before somewhere? Who else was plotted against in Jerusalem? Zechariah didn't compromise. By the order of the king, Joash, he was stoned to death in the courtyard of the temple. The very place where Joash and Zechariah's dad had worked so hard to restore. It's shocking, isn't it? Some hundreds of years later, in Jerusalem, in the temple, other leaders made plots. Another prophet of God, Jesus, was brutally murdered by the hands of those he'd come to save from God's anger. Drifting away from God is a dangerous thing. Not only does it lead to worshipping someone other than God, but our minds become twisted with the wrong ideas buzzing around us, and those ideas change the way we behave. We end up doing stuff we know to be wrong. We could be like those in the crowd shouting, "Crucify him!" We could be like those hammering the nails into Jesus' hands and feet. We would have betrayed and acted against his great love for us. Shortly, another small army came from Damascus, marching against Joash. It invaded Judah and Jerusalem, killed the leaders of the people. They sent all the plunder to their king in Damascus. Although the Aramean army had come with only a few men, the Lord delivered into their hands a much larger army. Because Judah had forsaken the Lord, the God of their fathers, judgment was executed on Joash. The Arameans withdrew, leaving Joash severely wounded. His officials conspired against him for murdering Zechariah, son of Jehoiada the priest. They killed him in his bed. So he died and was buried in the city of David. No state funeral here, not in the tombs of the kings. Wow. What a challenge. Are you in the crucible of conflict? God is on the throne. He'll care for you just as he did for Joash and provide for you as you seek after him. Are you on the couch of comfort? Life's gone well. You've come through some tough times. Folk around here have supported you well. Are you one who will look for what is convenient and compromise what you know to be right and true? Do you despise the things you know about God? Are you shouting, "Crucify"? Are you hammering the nails into the one who came to save you? Where is your heart? Will you continue to follow after God? God is faithful. He loves you, and he wants the very best for you. Don't ignore him or give him up for something or someone that can never save you or provide for you. What will your epitaph be? What eulogy will someone give for you? Served God through the crucible of conflict. Rested on a couch of comfort. Or continued to the end of life, committed to serving the Lord and delighting in him. Jesus is the only one who will give us strength for today and bright hope for tomorrow. He is faithful. Keep following him. Our last song is going to be just that. Great is thy faithfulness, O God, my Father. There's no shadow of turning with thee. Thou changest not. Thy compassions, they fail not. As thou hast been, thou forever wilt be. May that be the heart, our heart this evening.